is Joakim Noah, and you're listening to Chicago Bullseye.
Give it all you got, take your very best shot, and may the best team win. The time is now, the name of the game is action.
Tim Gallagher from the Chicago Bullseye in these exciting times after the Bulls' surprisingly dominant victory over a tough Portland Trail Blazer team in Portland. Even though the Bulls were shorthanded, missing Rondo, missing McDermott, others, they really showed up and just, I thought, the best game this season. How you doing, Tim? Glad to have you on the Bullseye again. What's up?
Hey, Fred. I'm doing well, and that was a really enjoyable game last night at Portland on a number of levels, aside from what happened on the floor, which we'll talk about. But I just like the visual aspect of it, too, just seeing the Bulls in those road red uniforms and just the way the Portland court is painted and lit. You know, I get pretty picky watching games at all the different venues, and some of them, the game is just much more enjoyable to view, you know, than others.
Aesthetically, yeah, aesthetically enjoyable viewpoint. As opposed
didn't
to,
you think last night was, obviously the Bulls playing great helped a lot too, but just aesthetically I thought it was a real nice visual.
Agreed, and they haven't played there well. In my opinion, I don't recall them playing there, having a good game there in quite a while. I mean, that was where I know Rose hurt his knee for the second time, and there's a lot of bad memories important. Man, they really showed up last night.
Yes, and I thought no Rondo, no McDermott, but it was no problem. So, and you know, we'll talk about a number of the performances. But I have to give my game ball to Jerry and Grant. He was just fantastic, and just this energy and makes you wonder why he maybe hasn't earned a few more minutes over the course of the season. But maybe this will propel him. And like they say in all sports, when someone goes down, it's next man up. And it was really wonderful to see him step up under those circumstances. And when you're playing against Damian Lillard and C.J. McCollum, which would certainly be in the argument among the top handful of backcourt combinations in the league, you know, a pretty short list of that, and the Bulls just dominated them. The other thing with Lillard, and I'm a big fan of him, he's put up some huge numbers, and he was the player in the Western Conference that I said was going to take even another step up in terms of just recognition and all-star status. But the best player on the floor last night was Jimmy Butler. You know, there was no question about it.
And absolutely.
And, you know, obviously he put up the numbers, but just his approach was really something to see. And I'm hoping that's the influence of Wade and the definition of roles, either spoken or not, in terms of you know, who's going to lead the team. And I don't know which feed in Chicago you might have listened to it through the Bulls feed, but I watched it through on NBA TV, so I got the Portland feed. So hearing Kevin Calabro and then I can't think of his last name. I think it's Lamar Hurd, a former Oregon State player. He didn't play in the NBA, but he was the color commentator. But they were just raving about how good Jimmy Butler was and how he was dominating the game. So I don't know if the Bulls fans heard that broadcast of it, or many of them did, but just, you know, we're not the only ones noticing.
And to jump in there with your comment about D-Wade, you know, having an influence on Jimmy, there was a quote after the game, and I'll read it to you. And I posted this on Twitter in case you haven't heard it. I'll just give it to you really briefly. This is from Jimmy. I was talking to D-Wade before the game. He tells me to go out with a killer instinct. Make them adjust to you. Go out with a full head of steam and show them why you are one of the best players in the league. That's what I try to do. Having D. Wade tell me that makes me think there's some truth to it. You know, so it's obvious after that quote that, reading that quote, he's having an influence on this entire team. You know, Wade's a winner on and off the court, and he's obviously having an influence on Butler because this is the best he's ever played, by far, to me. He's just taking it up another level where he's playing at a top-10 level in the NBA right now, especially the last 5 games.
Right. Well, and that dynamic with him and Derrick Rose, with Jimmy and Rose, was always questionable, you know, and I don't know if it was as bad as people said, but it certainly wasn't great. It certainly didn't appear that way, at least. And so with Wade having that kind of influence, and the other thing about Wade that I think, as much as we all love him and recognize what he's accomplished, I wasn't sure how much game he still had left. I didn't know if last season in Miami was a little bit of an aberration, but so far, and I know we're only 11 games in, but he still has game too. he's making some tough shots and making some all-star type plays, along with the influence he has as a future Hall of Famer and all the cachet that comes with that. He still can perform on the court as well. And you know all these young guys that are not even as far along as Jimmy, hopefully they're taking all that in, right? The Denzel Valentines and the Jerry and Grants and Bobby Portis, and they're seeing what it takes to succeed at the highest level and the type of effort that needs to happen every night. The one thing real quick on Grant too is I just am really impressed with his burstiness and his speed and athleticism. He seems to give the team a little bit different dimension with that. And I know they had someone like Aaron Brooks in the past who was maybe a little more of an explosive scorer, but I think bringing Grant in the game, especially against talented athletic guards, is something that we might have to hope the Bulls do a little more often.
He was incredible. Stealing the ball, moving it around, driving, hitting the three. I mean, he couldn't have really played any better.
Right, and he played with a demeanor or a confidence, that this is what I do. It wasn't, he didn't look like he was playing over his head. I don't know if he can do that every night. He's not going to be called upon to do that every night, but it's sure nice to know that that's something that he can do on occasion, especially when Rondo and McDermott are out and you're needing some bench help. The other point I was going to make about last night was just, again, another tremendous effort on the glass and rebounding. Lopez had kind of a relatively quiet double-double, 13 and 11, but really like what he's doing. And I've commented all along throughout the season, just, he's not going to be putting up gaudy numbers, but I just like his consistency and his presence on the floor. Just seems like a good teammate and doesn't seem to pout or get down at any point of the game, just keeps playing hard and stays focused. I guess the one disappointment, again, so far, and again with McDermott out, there's a chance for him to step up, but I'm still thinking Denzel Valentine is looking like he's not comfortable. And I know the injury set him back, but maybe depending how long McDermott's going to be out, this is certainly a time for him to get an opportunity. So we'll see if this road trip and this experience will help him take his game up another notch or two. I know there aren't huge expectations for him as a rookie, but I really felt like he's someone who should and will get significant minutes. I don't know, again, that injury set him back a little bit, obviously. But I looked online to try to verify this, but I believe I heard on NBA Game Time when they were doing the wrap-ups that the Bulls' rebound count last night was the highest by any team in the league this year. So, again, just kind of reinforcing how great a job they've been doing on the glass.
The number one in the league in offensive rebounding, a lot of that to me has to do with Lopez, how awesome he's been as an offensive rebounder, and Taj. Those two guys have just been absolutely fantastic. As I said on previous podcasts, I think there's a huge Grand Canyon between those two and everyone else. And I think the rebounding is aided by the fact that Rondo and Wade are definitely a step up. They're one of the better rebounding guards in the league. But
Jimmy's putting up some nice numbers on the boards too. So
exactly.
Right, when you think of the three perimeter players, it'd be hard to come up with a better trio in the league than Rondo, Wade, and Butler as far as rebounding wings and. And guard.
Jimmy's up to fifth in the league in free throws made. He's number one in terms of small forwards as far as free throws made. He's shooting at a 90% rate. That ability to get to the line and making those free throws is so important for this team, and it's why we've surprised a lot of people. And I don't see any reason why that won't continue, and it should continue in the playoffs. And I did notice yesterday, I don't know if you saw this in the game, but Wade was really giving it to the officials in the second quarter. And I said, you know what, I think that's going to pay dividends in Q4. And lo and behold, they got some really, I thought, beneficial calls. was a call in Cannon that I thought was a it was a 3-point attempt that, you know, was on the edge at best, and you know, I just thought it felt like that. I think Wade's presence is helping us get calls. What say you on that?
Well, sure, and we've seen that throughout the history of the league, where players with those kind of credentials, you know, just naturally have things go their way, and either younger players or players without that star status, you know, they have to earn their way to that kind of credibility, I guess you'd say. So, sure, you've seen that throughout the history of the league, and that's why, again, it's so important to have a player of Wade's stature. You know, we've talked about so many different angles of how that's important to a team, and we're seeing some of the benefits of that. But that was a really pleasantly surprising game last night, because Portland's a good team. I mean, that's a team that I think will be a playoff team, and it's tough to play at home. And I've watched enough of Lillard and McCollum give teams fits over the years, and the Bulls pretty much just shut them down. And granted, Portland's front line isn't anything to be, Plumlee, Myers Leonard, those aren't dominant or front line type post guys, and Lopez and Taj and those guys basically dominated them, which they should. So it's good to see it go as you hope it would.
Yeah, absolutely. What is the rest of this trip? I mean, it gets pretty tough. They're playing, you know, some good teams here. I know they got the Clippers, who are just playing at a very high level on Saturday night. Back next night, they're playing at L.A. Well, obviously same town, so it's not a big travel day, but they're playing the Lakers the next night, who have surprised a lot of people. I think how well they're playing, a lot better than expected. You know, what do you think, what do you foresee for the rest of this trip? Now, I'm happy they won this game. I mean, I was concerned that they might make an 0-4, you know, just because I think people underestimate how hard it is for teams to come together. There's three new guys basically in the rotation. It doesn't happen overnight. You see the problems that Golden State had with even bringing in an excellent player. And I think the Bulls are starting to come together quicker than anticipated. What do you see for the rest of this trip?
Well, it's always tough playing on the road in the NBA, especially against good teams. And at Utah on Thursday, it's going to be tough also. You know, Utah's a very good team, and you know, I think a playoff team in the West, and you know, traditionally a tough place to play. So, yeah, I would hope they take at least a split on this trip. You know, 2-2. I think that's very achievable. Although the Lakers are playing a lot better, they're certainly beatable. And we'll talk a little bit in a moment about just some of the pleasant surprises, I guess, in the league that I've observed so far. So, yeah, I guess just for the Bulls is developing that consistency. So they've had 2 3-game winning streaks. So, I mean, that's certainly in a young season, that's something good to see, and a good road win like at Portland. So I think there's some good signs. I think there's still also a lot of unanswered questions. And if Rondo and McDermott are going to miss the rest of this trip, that's certainly going to be a setback as well. You can't expect Grant to step up and play like that every night. But certainly with Jimmy and Wade and the other starters, they're certainly capable of playing well and winning on the road. You know, the Clippers are on fire. So, you know, at this point, I would say that would be the toughest opponent for the rest of the trip. And then I think Utah and the Lakers are both winnable, but they're going to have to play well.
Absolutely, absolutely. So what do you think about the rest of the NBA? Any other?
Well, we touched on it a little bit on the last podcast, but I just thought I'd take a moment to talk about a few surprising teams that I've seen so far on the positive side and a couple surprises on the negative side. And on the plus side, we just touched on two of them. The Clippers obviously are on fire, best record in the league, and really seem to be clicking. And I think, you know, a couple reasons for that. One is they're healthy, because they've had issues with Griffin and Chris Paul being out. But, you know, the continuity of their core players and coaching staff, we've talked about that over time, about building a playoff-type championship, contending-type team. You really need to have that continuity. And then the Clippers also picked up Maurice Spates from the Warriors and then picked up Raymond Felton. And those two have played really well. And added kind of another dimension to their depth, which has been one thing the Clippers have been criticized for in the past. So they're looking awful good. And you know, the ageless wonder, Jamal Crawford, still doing it as well and off the bench. You know, with the Lakers, you know, we've also touched on that before about, you know, just the challenge of seeing Kobe through his last season and Byron Scott not being a real nurturing head coach for their young players. And so Luke Walton's just brought in a whole level of freshness in terms of just being a class act. And Luke has won at all levels. I saw him here in San Diego when he played on a state championship high school team. And then at Arizona, he played in the Final Four, a couple championship rings as a player with the Lakers, played assistant coach on Golden State on their championship team. So winning and Luke Walton are, you know, go hand in hand. I think everyone's surprised that it's happening so quickly. And again, it's a long season, and I don't know that the Lakers are even, you know, confident they're going to earn a playoff berth this year. But I see just a huge change in the energy of the team and the confidence in the young guys. He's been playing Julius Randle at point forward, kind of like a Draymond Green type role, and he's actually looked pretty good doing it. D'Angelo Russell had 7 threes last night. They beat Brooklyn. You know, Larry Nance is a very underrated and talented young player. Ingram is looking better than I expected. So maybe things are starting to head on the right course with the Lakers. And then just on the surprising how bad they're doing this year, the Wizards, which the Bulls kind of ran over them last weekend, but without Wall and Beal, that team really doesn't have a chance. And, you know, and I don't really think Scott Brooks or Randy Whitman was a big step up. You know, and that's not a knock on either one of them, but I think that coaching change is just kind of a wash. So, again, I think that might have disrupted a little bit of their continuity, and I think injuries, you know, really hurt the Wizards as much as anything the last year or two. You know, Beal was out for a big chunk of last season, but otherwise I think they would have been a playoff team.
Isn't that part of the problem, though? I mean, Beal's always out. The guy is just an injury-prone player, and I think the league really needs to look at, or teams in this league need to look at, giving long-term huge dollar amounts to players that show a propensity to get injured. And he's definitely one of them, along with Derek and other guys come to mind. You just can't continue to give big money to guys like that who are, although very talented, are injured every other 5 minutes.
Right. You know, the one other thing I'll touch on is it's kind of surprising how bad the Pelicans are doing. Not that I had high hope for them, but you know, that they've really kind of bottomed out almost. And I know Drew Holiday has missed the season so far due to his wife having a brain tumor, and you know, that's a very, you know, delicate situation. So without him, obviously there's some impact, but just I thought with a, you know, although I mentioned on podcast with you that I thought everyone was real little quick to christen Anthony Davis as the next savior, the next MVP of the league, just because he didn't have much help around him. And I think despite him putting up numbers, you see it, they're not winning games. And I'm still puzzled why they fired Monty Williams. And here they get to the playoffs, they play competitive against Golden State, even though they didn't beat them in that series, but they played competitive games, and Anthony Davis seemed to really connect with Monty Williams as a coach and a mentor. So I just think when they fired him to bring in Alvin Gentry, that set them back a couple of years with just that transaction alone, despite the injuries.
Right.
And then the Mavericks, you know, I had the Mavericks in my preseason prediction as a, you know, being one of the last seeds in the West in the playoffs, but they really struggled as well, and maybe age and injuries with Dirk and Darren Williams. He's another one of those players, like you've mentioned, that seems to always be out. And so I thought they'd be better than they've been. And then, you know, I wasn't as high on Boston as everyone from the beginning. You know, you and I both agreed on that, and, you know, that they're just hovering around 500. Doesn't surprise me, but I think a lot of people in the league expected really big things from the Celtics. And, again, it's still early, but I haven't seen it. Now, you know, mm-hmm. I see the Bulls kind of, you know, competing for either the 4, 5, 6 seed with Charlotte, with Boston. I think the Bulls are kind of right in that mix, you know, behind Cleveland, Toronto and Atlanta. I think those are the three top teams in the East. And after that, I think it's kind of going to be a dogfight between Chicago, Charlotte, and Boston for those next couple spots.
Yeah, it's been exciting. I tell you what, though, if the Bulls end up knocking off L.A., the Clippers, or, you know, finish strong, maybe not if they're just competitive with the Clippers and win a few more games on this road trip, I think people are really going to start paying attention. This team is considerably better than we had thought. And a lot of it has to do with Jimmy taking another step into what I think now he's a top 10 NBA player, where he wasn't in that. He was probably, you know, between 15 and 20 maybe before, or maybe 10 to 15. I think he's, you know, 5 to 10 now. And, you know, just adding Wade, you get two guys that can draw double teams on your offense that get to the free throw line is extremely difficult to play against.
Right, I agree. And what's the word that you're hearing about McDermott and when he's expected back? Is he not going to be on this road trip at all?
No, he's in that concussion protocol. I think he's going to, once, you know, so I don't think he flew with the team. I didn't see if he actually did, but once he gets okay, they'll hop on a plane and catch him. And it's a big loss not having him out there, because I really do think he brings that shooting, the three-point that can get you right back in the game or extend the lead really quick. And in the right matchups, the guy's just fantastic. And I think he's, you know, although he hasn't hit shots at the level I expected of him, I thought he's done a lot of other things pretty well. I thought he's rebounded well. I thought he's passed very well. And I think he's also taken it to the hoop pretty well. And, you know, I'm hoping, my biggest issue is, you know, I think Nico had a really nice stretch there yesterday in the fourth quarter, hitting some threes. And, you know, I'm hoping that Wade did a great job again in a position or drawing the defender to get him wide open shots. And, you know, hopefully his confidence will come back and he'll start hitting at that, you know, almost 40% rate that he did last year.
Right. Yeah, Nico did play better. And I liked when they played that kind of a half court press or trap, and having Nico on the front end of that using his length. And I kind of liked, you know, and that's a way also to maybe get his energy going. And he seemed to play with more control, and, you know, it was kind of a blowout game. But just the pace that he played with, I thought was much more in line with what I'm hoping from him. You know,
absolutely.
With him, it's a real, you know, balance, right? Because you want him to be confident enough to have those bursts and hit some of those key threes that he can do, but you also don't want him to make, you know, unwise decisions or taking unearned heat check type, you know, 30 footers. So he played under
yeah.
control last night.
Tim, one more question for you before we wrap things up, and thank you so much for taking the time to join us. The last question I had for you was regarding Jahmyl Okafor. A lot of rumors around him possibly being available. Some people have suggested the Bulls have been aggressive, make a package to him for him. What's your take on him as a basketball player? What do you foresee as his future?
Well, I saw him play in person as a high school player and was very impressed with him. I think he might have been a sophomore or junior in high school when I saw him play out here in Orange County, and really was impressed and had high hopes for him. I kind of compared him to maybe like a Brad Doherty type player, you know, once he got to the NBA level. Obviously at Duke, the one year he played, they won the NCAA championship, so he was doing some things right there. You know, there's been kind of a knock on him, I know, in Philadelphia, but the Sixers are so bad. It's kind of like somebody playing for the Kings out west here. It's hard to really get a good assessment of them in a bad situation. You know, I know Philly's trying to change the energy and leadership there. But, well, we talked about the Bulls needing a little backup help on the front line. And obviously, Okafor being a Chicago native, that would be a kind of a cool thing to have him part of the team. I would just be concerned what they'd have to give up to get him. What have they talked about in terms of a package to get him?
Well, I heard one suggestion. I mean, there's nothing that's with any credibility, but I heard one podcaster that I respect offer McDermott and Nico, which I would absolutely be against. You know, first of all, I don't think Nico's on the last year of his deal. It's not that I'm in love with him. I like McDermott a lot more, and I would not, and I think you should be dealing in a position of strength. I would be happy to trade Portis, who I've just been extremely frustrated with on the defensive end. I think he's pretty awful. I think he's as bad as Gasol was without the shot blocking or the rebounding. He's just really bad defensively, although he had a couple nice plays in Q3 and Q4 last night, and I think he's got hope on the offensive end. But I'd trade, you know, a Portis, maybe even consider a number one pick next year for him. What do you think of that?
I could go for something like that. I wouldn't trade McDermott. I wouldn't have him part of that deal. I would think that would be a deal breaker for me, just because, as we talked about, when you got players like Butler and Wade that are going to draw double teams, and a guy like Rondo who finds open shooters with the best of them, you want to have a shooter. And a young player like McDermott, I would say moving Nico, and again, I don't know how this would line up with the cap for Philly, but, you know, some package of either Nico and or Portis or a pick to get Okafor, I would think as a backup and to kind of work closely with Robin Lopez and, you know, have a little frontline help, because I don't think Felicio is going to get there. You know, he's kind of slipped a little bit in terms of his minutes and his role. So, as long as McDermott wasn't part of the deal, I would look at it. Sure.
Tim Gallagher, basketball historian, joining the Bullseye again in a special addendum to our previous cast that we recorded. Tim, great to have you on. I'd love to get your thoughts on this weekend, which I thought was just a fantastic weekend of basketball, with the Bulls playing the Clippers and the Lakers back-to-back Saturday, Sunday night. Let's get into the Clippers game first, because I thought this was a real lost opportunity for the beloved Bull. I'd like to get your just general thoughts about the game and hear your takes on the unfortunate loss to the Clippers.
Sure, Fred. And I was worried about Utah being a letdown after that Cruz victory at Portland, but they took care of business in Utah. So I thought after that they had their mindset right for the Clippers, and the way they started the game, it looked like that was certainly true, but we've seen enough NBA games to know that those big leads early in the game, especially on the road, are sometimes kind of fool's gold, where a good team is going to come back and the inevitable ebbs and flows of a game. Now, that game at Portland never did quite get it together, which is kind of rare, but I knew that they were unlikely to blow out the Clippers, but like you said, it was a lost opportunity because they seemed to have that game in hand, and then things kind of unraveled, and I've got some thoughts about what I think maybe could have been done differently, or looking ahead to other games where they're in this situation, how they might handle it. And let me know if you agree with this. The first thing, I just thought Wade got a little sloppy with some ball handling. A couple of passes that were just not fundamental passes, and like a little dribble bounce pass. And I just thought that was unlike him to kind of let that kind of sloppiness show, especially on the road. And, you know, I did think, well, maybe he's getting a little tired and mentally, which again is pretty unlike Wade because of his stature and what he's done over the years. So that was the first thing. And then the other, and obviously Nico bounced back quite nicely against the Lakers, and we'll talk about that in a second, but you and I have talked about this on and off. When Nico doesn't have it, you just got to go to someone else. Right, I mean, 1 of 7 from the field, 0 of 5
yeah.
from the line, and you could just see that it wasn't his night, especially when he missed those 2 threes in a row. Again, when the game was definitely still, I thought the Bulls still had somewhat of a slight command of the game at that point. So my thought is, when he's obviously off and doesn't have it, and he's a streaky guy, and we will all acknowledge that, I just think you have to go with someone else at that point, even if it's you go big again with Lopez I forget the exact lineups that he was mixed with every time there, but you could go either big with Lopez, you could go Isaiah Cannon, you could go even with Denzel, who hadn't really played that well up to that point, but again showed some spark against the Lakers last night. So I think the Wade sloppiness and Nico just not having it were two things that really kind of led to the Clippers turning things around.
Yeah, I have a hard time really criticizing Wade for anything, just because he was the primary reason we were up 19, you know, with that start. And, you know, I understand your points, but I just thought overall he was just so fantastic in that game. And he just does so many things as far as drawing fouls and and affecting the defense is like a magnet and opening up opportunities for other players. I didn't think he was nearly as much of an issue as your second point, which was Nico, who was just a travesty, 0 for 5 from 3, 1 for 7 overall. And not only was he horrible on the offensive end, but he was just a travesty on the defensive end. Really poor lateral movement, not attacking the boards. And it's a tough matchup for him. When you got two big, athletic guys in the front court who just can dominate him physically, you got to hit the three, or else you're completely worthless against that team. I thought a bigger issue, though, Tim, I'd like your opinion on this, was Hoiberg staying with Portis for so long to close that game, when Portis, to me, was frankly just god awful on the defensive end. You know, he's on most fights who just killed us in that game, and that's who the signature signee was. And I guess in the post game, his reason for it was, well, I felt he was our best big man to handle the lateral movement there. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Really? I think Brooke, I mean, it's just like Robin Lopez is, even as lateral quickness wise, is a better answer defensively. I don't care if then in every facet of the game, he's better defensively than Portis. I'd like to get your opinion on that.
Right. And with Wade, I am nitpicking. I'm loving what Wade's doing for the team, how he's played, how he's shooting the ball. I think he's answered a lot of critics. Well, he's not going to be able to make threes, and he's shooting the ball really well. So, yeah, with Wade, my standards for him are so high that, you know, I am nitpicking with some of those ball handling situations. But I remember two possessions that I just thought he got a little too casual when the game was really at a critical point. I agree with you on the minutes for Portis, and well, Spates is really the reason I think that the Bulls lost. I mean, obviously, when you got CP3 and Blake Griffin and Jamal Crawford, you got, you know, really talented, explosive players. In fact, that dunk Blake Griffin had, I let out a whoop so loud that the neighbor's dog started barking on that screen roll there.
It was incredible! Wow, what an athletic! I mean, you guys, ultra athletic. You don't see that, and definitely, you know, you can't guard against that. You're going to lose against that 9 times out of 10. But you're right, when you're losing to a guy like Mo Spieth, it's like, come on, man, let's get that offensive rebound that he had near the end of the game was just killer. And if Robin Lopez is in the game, that doesn't happen. It just doesn't happen.
Right, and well, and then the point of not having Lopez in the game, I think Lopez played 3 minutes in the fourth quarter, if I'm not mistaken, in the Clippers loss. And
correct.
And so, and Spates hit 3 of 4 on three-pointers. So my whole thought was, well, if you're going to go small and not play Lopez, and small meaning Taj or Nico or Portis as your bigs, then get out there and guard him then, right? I mean, if you're not going to get out there on the three-point line and take that away from him, then you might as well have Lopez in there to at least get on the glass or have Lopez draw him away from the basket, but at least have a hand up. So that was the thing that was most disappointing. If you're going to, you know that Spates, you know, with the pick and pop, he learned from the Masters playing with Klay Thompson and Curry at Golden State. So moving down to LA and having CP3 and Jamal Crawford is not too far away from that, right? Where they're going to draw a lot of attention defensively and pick the ball. Pop the ball over to Spates for that three. So I thought those threes that he hit were really the daggers that ended that game. So I agree. It was a lost opportunity, and you know that game was very winnable. So I guess the good news is you're against one of the elite teams in the league on the road. And again, you don't have Doug, you don't have Michael Carter Williams, and you're right there with them. So you know, in a game that they could have, should have won. So,
yeah, one more point on the controversial foul call, which, you know, I thought was a travesty. I thought it was a terrible call. And I've argued with a lot of my friends and said, Jimmy should, you know, give him a little bit more room. And I agree to a certain extent. I mean, I want Blake shooting threes, right? Somewhat contested threes. I'll let him throw it up. And if it goes in, well, it's just not our night. But that said, he was straight up. When you're straight up, and the offensive player forces the content, and you're Jimmy Butler, you shouldn't be getting a foul call on you. I thought that was a terrible call. I'd like to get your thoughts on that play.
Well, I agree that it certainly doesn't look like a defensive foul, but just from watching a lot of games in the league, that foul, 98% of the time is against the defensive player. Maybe it's a no call on occasion, but usually, even when the offensive guy draws contact, unless they're kicking out a leg or something where the officials have kind of cracked down on that, meaning the offensive shooter is kicking out a leg to draw the contact. But on a call like that, that's a tough one. It's rare that it doesn't go against the defensive player. So, I mean, I think the game was over by that point anyway. And actually,
well, no, it was still a one-possession game. I mean, if they held them there, they were within 3 points at that point. I think it was
right.
They were down three, so it wasn't like, I mean, that was a critical call, and after that point, I agree, it was pretty much over. Yeah, but it does bring up a larger point where I felt during the game, those guys get calls. A few guys get more calls than, Blake Griffin and the players on the Clippers, and the Bulls finally have that now. I feel that way with Butler and Wade. There's times where I watch the game and Wade will get a call, and I'm just like, man, oh, man. I have not seen a Bulls player get calls like that, since Jordan. And Rose sure as heck never got them. And I think that's an advantage. That's another advantage that it's very hard to quantify, but it does happen. And now it seems like Jimmy's benefiting from those too.
Oh, for sure Jimmy is. There's been a few times where they've called fouls as Jimmy's gone to the basket, which I thought either Jimmy totally initiated the contact or it was a no call. But again, you earn your way to those kind of calls in the league, and it looks like Jimmy's there now, which just
right.
by the quantity of free throws he's getting, I think part of it is he's kind of earned that, but also he's being aggressive and he's in attack mode, which he has to be. And then the third part of the equation is he makes his free throws. He makes all of them almost, which is great. And, I just think we can't underestimate the value of Wade, both tangibly and intangibly to the team, and especially with Jimmy.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. To that, and then, of course, though, Wade sits out in the back-to-back, a critical game, the exact opposite. I had a good friend have the nerve to say Jimmy played 39 minutes in a back-to-back against the Lakers, where I've been extremely critical of Thibodeau's habits over the year, and I would counter, Butler's averaging, I think, 34 minutes a game. He's not even in the top 20 minutes per game. And, in a game where Wade is out and you're going to sit him, rightly so, 39 minutes isn't too much to ask of Jimmy, and I'll live with it, and I'm sure he'll get it back and he'll watch those minutes over the year. But to somehow correlate Fred Hoiberg with Tom Thibodeau is laughable on its face. He's much more... makes a lot more sense in how he paces these guys and how he plays them minutes-wise.
Right. And my feeling in watching that in the minutes that Jimmy played last night, I think that they had command of that game and it was a winnable game. And the Lakers, as we've kind of talked about on some previous podcasts, the energy has really changed for the better there, and Luke Walton has those guys really competing. So I think Fred just wanted to make sure that game didn't slip away, and I think you really needed Jimmy out there to make sure that happened. And so I realize, was that a life or death kind of game last night? Well, no, but it's a very competitive but winnable road game, and you need to make sure you come out of there with that W. So I kind of saw it as maybe Jimmy getting a few more minutes than maybe would be typical, just because you needed to win that game. A couple other thoughts with the Laker game last night. It was a good example of how Rondo can really, dominate is probably too strong of a word, but just command a game without scoring. Just his ball handling wizardry and just creativeness, with 9 rebounds and 12 assists. It's just, he's just, a real artist out there on the floor. Obviously, Nico was very good last night. The 15 rebounds were awesome. He still didn't really shoot a great percentage. not what I would really like to see, especially the 5 of 10 free throws. But if he's getting 15 rebounds, I'll live with some bad shots and some other mistakes. So definitely a better bounce back game. To what he showed in that loss against the Clippers. The other couple comments I had were it was good to see Denzel Valentine kind of provide a little spark off the bench. And really, for the first time for me, it really looks like he's feeling like he's starting to belong. And gosh, what better role models could he have than Wade and Jimmy Butler as a wing type player to learn from? And so, thankfully, you know, even despite McDermott and Michael Carter Williams being out, you know, they've won 3 out of 4 now on this road trip without Denzel really having much of an impact. But you know, again, I'm thinking with injuries and other things, we need to kind of get him a little more seasoned. Especially as the season wears on. And then Isaiah Cannon, isn't he a fun player to watch? I mean, he's really
what a bargain.
And,
yeah,
and you know, and I kind of had hoped that he would at least give some Aaron Brooks type bursts on occasion, but I think he's delivered that and more so far. And
I mean, for a million, I think he's making like $1 million a year, and I can't agree more. Like, I'm not a huge fan of the guy, but for what he's being paid. He's really a good player, a good role player who can give you some good minutes at the one, even like on offensive end, really play in essence the two sometimes and stretch a four, make a couple big threes. And his defense is better than I expected. You know, he's not going to ever be a great player, an all-star, but he's a good role player on a bargain contract.
Right. And I think you need a guy like him on the roster that could, you know, you can see how he could get off and have a 12 or 15 point quarter on occasion, right? It's not going to be there every night, but he is a weapon. And you're right, for his price tag, what a nice roster spot to have. And again, with some of the injuries, you know, he's needed to step up and, you know, even play a little point on occasion. And, you know, he's really more of an undersized two, I think,
Yeah, I do also want to touch on, you did mention Nico and you mentioned Rondo with 9 boards and Nico with the 15. I mean, they utterly dominated the Lakers on the boards. I think they had I can't remember the exact numbers, but they thoroughly dominated them on the boards. So much so that Larry Nance Jr. in his post game specifically mentioned in the second quarter, you know, they've just basically they just took it to them on the boards. And that's such an advantage with this team. It's, somehow I don't think it's highlighted enough that, you know, Lopez, Taj, awesome rebounders, and those guys deserve most of the credit. But their guards rebound. I mean, Wade, Butler at the three, it's insane. Rondo, it's insane how well those starters rebound the basketball.
Right. And as we've talked about, aside from the statistical element of it, you know, being so aggressive on the offensive glass and getting those extra possessions, this is a real momentum drain for the other team, and you know. And how about Lopez last night with another double double, but a quiet one, right? And I really think he's performed really nicely, and kind of a little bit under the radar.
Couldn't agree more. I'm in love with this kid. I think he's quickly become one of my favorite players to wear a Bulls uniform, and that he's utterly relentless on the offensive boards. It's all, I've never seen it. He reminds me in some ways flashes of a younger Joakim Noah on the offensive boards, how aggressive he is tipping the ball. He's never going to probably be as kind of a unique offensive player that Noah was as far as, you know, handling the ball and passing, but he's definitely every bit as good on the offensive boards. And I can't believe what a contract, you know, when you look at a big picture. He's better than Noah. Right now, he's a better ball player than Noah. I'd rather have him. Absolutely, I'd rather have him. And I was looking at the contracts on the Bulls overall. Taj, bargain. I think Lopez is a bargain compared to what they get on the open market now. Butler, a bargain. Cannon, a bargain. And I think Wade, although he's paid a lot, I mean, I think he's almost a bargain when you consider what he brings off the court and on in terms of leadership, setting examples for these young guys. This roster, I like the way it's constructed.
I agree, and the front office has been criticized a lot, as we know. And as I've told you and mentioned on the podcast, I think another thing is just being able to gracefully exit Rose and Noah from the roster. And when I say that, I mean, you know, those were two beloved players, certainly at points of their careers, if not all of their careers in Chicago for the most part. And so... You know, I think the front office and probably most fans they realize that, you know, the productivity from these guys is just not what it used to be, and they really need to move on from that. And if the Bulls were able to, you know, trade Noah and get assets, you know, Lopez and Grant, and then Noah obviously signed with his hometown team, the Knicks. And so, you know, everything kind of worked out for everyone, but, you know, I think it was, you know, the things didn't get ugly in terms of how the Bulls had to remove those guys from their team. And you know, so there was some gracefulness to how that all worked out, whether, you know, planned or not. The other thing with Lopez, I'm, you know, looking at the box score last night, 27 minutes, no turnovers, 2 blocks, 2 assists, 12 points, 11 rebounds. I mean, you know, I just like his attentiveness, and looks like he'd be a fun teammate to play with, and just very underrated in terms of how he's been performing so far. And I'm surprised he's bounced around so much in his career. I'm not sure why, but sure glad the Bulls have him.
No, I agree completely. He's a huge part of why this team is overachieving, I think, in many people's eyes. And he's absolutely, to me, if an injury occurs to either him or Taj, the drop-off is substantial in terms of defense. And we need to keep him healthy, and we need to keep Taj healthy. And the good news is he does seem to have a pretty good record of that. So, knock on wood, let's keep it going and keep these victories. I just feel like we lost opportunity with that Clippers game. Really would have been incredible to win that game and kind of define, you know, I think the people would really be talking with a victory, you know, against the Clippers on their home court. Either way, to me, this team's is much better than most people expected. It's even better than I expected, you know, frankly. So I'm pretty darn excited with the Chicago Bulls.
Yes, well, the record's about where I thought it would be, although if you would have told me that they wouldn't have Rondo for the first two games of the road trip at Portland and Utah and no McDermott, and they would have won those two road games, I would have doubted you on that one. And obviously not having Wade against the Lakers, you know, was concerning, but, you know, even more so combined with Bill McDermott there. So, yeah, if we can just see the Bulls through these next two, so at Denver and at Philly, so two very winnable road games, you know, if they show up and are ready. And, you know, we still have Michael Carter-Williams coming back here soon, too. So after that Sixers game, which is, Friday, then they have 4 days off. So hopefully that'll get everybody ready to go for the next stretch of the roster. So just hopefully there's no letdown against the Nuggets or Sixers.
Amen. Tim, great talking to you, brother, and looking forward to having you on again soon. Hopefully we'll be talking about many more Bulls victories sometime early next week. If I don't talk to you between now and then, happy Thanksgiving to you and your family.
Well, you too, Fred. Happy Thanksgiving to you and all the listeners, and we'll talk again soon.
All right, Tim. Thanks again. Have a good night.